Today we come to the third chapter. With this chapter we begin the second stage in the spiritual development, the stage of samadhi or concentration. The first chapter deals with the first stage, sila, and the second chapter also is a kind of sila. But from the third chapter on until the 13th chapter, the second stage, the stage of concentration or samadhi, is described in detail. So the chapter actually begins with the definition of the word samadhi. So it is important that we understand what we are learning or what we are talking about. So samadhi, the word samadhi is translated as concentration. So in order to understand it properly, we have to go back to the Pali word samadhi. Now samadhi, the word samadhi is composed of sam and a and dha plus e. The word or the prefix sam here has two meanings. One, the first one is evenly. That means in a unifying way, without scattering. And the second meaning is rightly. That means without being distracted. And a and dha together mean putting or placing. So samadhi means placing without scattering, or placing, keeping them unified and undistracted. Placing what? Placing the consciousness and its concomitants, or the mental factors. Placing on what? On a single object. So samadhi is a mental factor. Samadhi is one among the 52 mental factors. Among the 52 mental factors, we call it one-pointedness of mind. In Pali, ekaggata. So ekaggata and samadhi are the same. They are synonymous. So samadhi is that mental factor which places consciousness and its concomitants on a single object, without scattering them, keeping them unified and undistracted. So samadhi coordinates all the mental factors and also consciousness arising together with it, and does not allow them and also allow itself to be distracted, to wander away. And in the, not in this chapter, in the another chapter of the Visuddhimagga, samadhi is described as the steadiness of mind, like the steadiness of a lamp's flame when there is no draft. So in a draftless room, there may be a candle with a flame. And so like that flame, steady samadhi is. And it means that the samadhi steadiness is a series of moments of steadiness. Not one moment only, but a series of consciousness or moments of consciousness arising again and again on a single object. Because samadhi is a mental factor, and as a mental factor, it must arise and disappear in just three sub-moments. So here, being on the object for some time or without scattering and unified and undisturbed means a series of samadhi moments arising and disappearing, taking one and the same object, taking a single object. So that is what is called samadhi in Buddhism. And whenever we want to understand something, we have to understand it with reference to its characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause. And so these are given on page 85. Concentration has the non-distraction as its characteristic. So samadhi, characteristic of samadhi is non-distraction, non-wandering. Its function is to eliminate distraction. It is manifested as non-wavering, non-shaking. And its proximate cause is bliss. Bliss means sukha, comfort or something like happiness. Because only when there is comfort of the body and of the mind can there be concentration or samadhi. In another chapter, the characteristic and others are given a little differently, although they mean more or less the same thing. So in that chapter, the characteristic is given as non-wandering and non-distraction. The function is to conglomerate cognizant states as water does bath powder. That means that you have some powder of flour and you put some water in it, and so the water coordinates and make them into one solid thing. So like water coordinating the particles of powder, samadhi coordinates or collects or does not let them scatter the concomitants arising with it, both consciousness and the chetasikas or mental factors. So it keeps together the consciousness and mental factors, not let them be scattered. And its manifestation is, they are described as peace. Because when there is samadhi, and there is peacefulness, and the proximate cause is, again, sukha, bliss. And then the author describes different kinds of concentration. First, it is of only one kind with reference to the characteristic of non-distraction. According to this characteristic, there is only one kind of samadhi. But then it can be of two kinds, three, four, and so on. So among them, the two kinds is excess concentration and absorption concentration. I think it is important to understand these two at least. Excess concentration and absorption concentration. Excess concentration means neighborhood concentration. It is in the neighborhood of jhana or magga. Therefore, it is called neighborhood or excess concentration. Suppose a person practices kasina meditation, looking at a disc and taking it into his mind, remembering it or memorizing it. And when he has got the image in his mind, he is said to have got the grasped sign. And then he dwells upon this sign, this mental sign, mental image again and again, until that image becomes free from all defects, very pure. And at that time, he is said to gain the neighborhood concentration or excess concentration. It's a very, very strong concentration at that time. And this neighborhood or excess concentration precedes the absorption concentration or jhana concentration, and also magga, the third concentration. So that kind of concentration is called excess concentration or neighborhood concentration. And the other concentration following, immediately following that, is called absorption concentration. But here absorption does not mean jhana only. The Pali word is apana, A-P-P-A-N-A. So apana concentration means both jhana concentration and path or magga concentration.
So samadhi can be broken, there can be broken up into path
here,
and jhana types of samadhi?
Yes. Jhana samadhi and magga samadhi belong to absorption concentration. So first there is excess concentration, and then absorption concentration. Absorption concentration can be divided into two: jhana concentration and magga concentration.
So samadhi is the larger term, and then jhana is a subset of samadhi in this.
That's right. Yes. And these two kinds of concentration are for samatha meditation, tranquility meditation. But in vipassana, we have another kind of concentration, which is called momentary concentration. It is like excess concentration, but it is not really excess concentration, because there is no jhana there. But with regard to samatha meditation, there are these two kinds of concentration: the neighborhood or excess concentration and absorption concentration. And again, let me repeat, absorption concentration does not mean jhana only, but magga also. On page 86, paragraph 6, 2, the subjects of meditation which lead to the attainment of neighborhood concentration and not jhana concentration are given. So I want you to look at this chart. But it is in Pali, and so it will not be easy at this stage. If you look at the chart, the last column, jhana. Now you can see that if you practice a particular subject of meditation, you can get, say, first to fifth jhana, or first jhana only, or no jhana at all, and so on. So you look at. Please look at the middle of the page. Anusati 10. Now, Buddha anusati means recollection of the virtues of the Buddha. If you practice that meditation, you will not get jhana. You will get only the excess concentration. But you will not get jhana concentration or no jhana through the practice of that kind of meditation. So there are no jhana meditations like Dhamma Nosati, Sangha Nosati, and so on. So in these subjects of meditation, you can get only the excess concentration and not absorption concentration. And this chapter will be useful for the other chapters too. But unfortunately, I deliberately use Pali because it is shorter to use Pali words here. If you have to write in English, you have to say recollection of the virtues of the Buddha and so on. So I need space on the page. And the 40 subjects of meditation are given in this chapter later on. Page 112. So you'll find the 40 subjects on 112 or 113, maybe. Yes. So you can check with that.
Are they in the same order in the book that you have on your chart?
More or less. Let me see. Maybe not strictly the same order. Let me see. 10 casinas, 10 foulness, 10 recollections, 4 divine abidings, 4 immaterial states, 1 perception, 1 defining. No. So, casina 10, right. And then 10 kinds of foulness, the asubha 10. That's all right. 10 recollections, right. 4 divine abidings, yes. Appamanya. 4 immaterial states are the last on the chart. Arupa 4, they are 4 immaterial states. And 1 perception means here sanya 1. And 1 defining means vavatana 1. So the 4 immaterial states are put at the end on the chart. The order on the chart are taken from the Manual of Abhidhamma. And then the other kinds of samadhi, like mundane, supramundane, and so on. And with happiness, without happiness, with piti and without piti, accompanied by bliss, accompanied by equanimity, and so on. In order to understand these divisions, you have to remember the jhanas, 5 jhanas. The first jhana is accompanied by initial application, sustained application, piti, sukha. Let me use Pali words here. Piti, sukha, and one-pointedness of mind. And the second is accompanied by sustained application, and so on. And the third, piti, sukha, and one-pointedness. And the fourth jhana, sukha and one-pointedness. And fifth jhana, upekha, indifference and one-pointedness of mind. And then, I hope you remember that jhanas can be 4 or 5. In the Sutta Pitaka, jhanas are described as 4. It is very rare that they are described as 5 in the suttas. But in Abhidhamma, they are described as both 4 and 5. So according to fourfold method, there are 4 jhanas. But according to fivefold method, there are 5 jhanas. But actually, they are the same. The first of the fourfold method is the first of the fivefold method. The second of the fourfold method is the third of the fivefold method, and so on. So if you remember that, then you will understand these divisions. But if you don't, don't worry. Okay, then page 87, paragraph 14. In the first of the triads, it is not triad, it is tetrads. Not triads, because this is a fourfold division of samadhi and not threefold division. So, tetrads, not triads. and of difficult progress and sluggish direct knowledge. Difficult progress means difficult practice. You have to practice much. You have to spend a lot of time practicing that in order to make progress. And sluggish direct knowledge means sluggish understanding. Understanding is slow. So understanding can be swift or it can be slow. And the practice also is difficult for some, but it is not so for others. And that depends on many factors, and they are given in these pages. And with regard to the previous practice, if he cultivates the suitable, likewise, if he devotes himself to development without carrying out the preparatory task of severing impediments, etc., his progress is difficult. Now, paragraph 17. If a man is... according to whether one has had practice in serenity and insight. And here, what is meant is whether one had the practice of samatha meditation or vipassana meditation in his former lives. So if you have practiced samatha, if you have the practice of samatha meditation in your former lives, then when you take up practice samatha meditation here, then your progress is not difficult. You have the easy progress. If you do not have such practice in the past, then it may be difficult. So if he has had no practice, means no practice in former lives. And then with regard to the defilements, sometimes some people have sharp defilements and some people have no, and so they are explained here. And on page 89, paragraph 22, about the middle of the paragraph, the state of partaking of distinction is the attaining of higher distinction. And higher distinction here means higher jhanas. Sometimes distinction means enlightenment. But here distinction means jhanas. And the partaking of penetration is accessibility to perception and attention accompanied by dispassion. That means vipassana. So partaking of penetration means leading to vipassana.
And what is the partaking of diminution?
And that means he doesn't practice it well, and so diminution means something like regression. You may lose the degree of concentration if you don't practice. So accessibility to opposition means the hindrances. So when hindrances are close to you, then your samadhi, you may lose samadhi. So that kind of samadhi is called partaking of diminution. And stagnation is just the samadhi does not regress and does not progress. It's only there, standing there, not making progress. And that is called here partaking of stagnation. That is because The person cannot get rid of attachment to that samadhi. He is attached to the samadhi, and so he cannot progress. He cannot make progress. And then, how should it be developed? This is an important part of this chapter. So, in order to practice meditation, the author described in detail how to prepare before you take up the real practice of meditation. So preparation should be done with meticulous care. And that is given on page 91 and paragraph 28. So developed by one who has taken his stand on virtue that is quite purified in the way already stated. So the first thing a person must do in preparation for the practice of meditation is to purify his virtue, to purify his moral conduct. Then he should sever any of the 10 impediments that he may have. So the next thing is to sever impediments, to get rid of impediments. And they are said to be 10, and they will be described in detail. And then after severing the impediments, what must he do? He should then approach the good friend. That means he must find a teacher who can give him meditation subject, who can teach him meditation subject. So he must find a good friend or a teacher. And then he should apprehend from among the 40. Apprehend really means he should take a meditation subject. He should take from among the 40 meditation subjects one that suits his own temperament. So people have different temperaments, and there are meditations which are exceptionally suitable for a certain kind of temperament, and they will be given later. So it is good to choose a subject of meditation which is most suitable for one's own temperament. So taking up or studying about the meditation which suits one's temperament. And after that, he should avoid a monastery unfavorable to the development of concentration. That means he must find a suitable place for meditation. And for a monk, he must avoid unfavorable monasteries and live in a favorable monastery. Then he should sever the lesser impediments. Again, there are some lesser impediments, like cutting nails, or mending roads and so on. They are called lesser impediments. He must cut lesser impediments also. And then go into practice of meditation. So these have to be done before he goes into the real practice of meditation. So the first, to purify one sila, to purify the moral conduct, is described in the first and the second chapters. And so the next one is to get rid of impediments. And so there are 10 kinds of impediments mentioned here: a dwelling place, family and gain, class and building too as fifth. The Pali word here is kamma, like the word kamma we are familiar with. But kamma here means work. So building really means not building, but building work, or work to be done at the monastery, building a monastery or mending the monastery, something like that. And then travel, and then relatives, and then affliction or disease, and then study or books, and supernormal powers. So these 10 are called impediments. So a person who wants to practice meditation after purifying the virtue must cut these impediments so that he can practice meditation without hindrance, without obstacles. So the first one is a dwelling place. And I think they are not difficult to understand. But let me say something on paragraph 30, towards the end of the paragraph. Or who has many belongings stored there? A monk who has many belongings. Or whose mind is caught up by some business. That is not so accurate a translation here. It really means who has attachment, whose mind is caught up by some reason, not by business, caught up by some reason. Who has attachment to the dwelling place, to the monastery. For others, it is not an impediment. And then the story of two friends. Two clansmen left Anuradhapura, it seems, and eventually went forth at the Thubarama. Thubarama is a pagoda just outside the city of Anuradhapura. Anuradhapura is in Sri Lanka. One of them made himself familiar with the two codes. Now, we have met this word, two codes, right? Do you remember? Two codes means two sets of rules, one for monks and the other for nuns. They are called two codes. So monks have to study both rules for monks and rules for nuns, because they have to keep some of the rules which are laid down for nuns also. So two codes means two sets of rules, two patimokkhas. But the footnote here is not quite helpful, because the commentary he quoted here is not at this place, but at another place. So here two codes mean just the two sets of rules in Vinaya, but in another place. The observers of the codes, the words observers of the codes, are commented upon by the sub-commentary as those who study both rules of Vinaya and Abhidhamma. Because at the beginning of Abhidhamma Pitaka, there is a portion called Matika. Matika means contents, or something like a list of the things to be explained in detail later. That, so the word Madhika comes to mean two things. One is the rules for monks and nuns, and the other is the first section in the first book of Abhidhamma. But here, After becoming monks, they learned these two codes, these rules for monks and nuns. And then, after 5 years seniority, and he took part in the Bhavaran and then left for the place called Pajina Migadaya and so on, Pajina Khandaraji and so on. So, here, two codes means just two sets of rules. So the footnote here is not here is out of place. And then with regard to Pavarana also, footnote 10, ceremony held at the end of the rains, during 3 months of which season bhikkhus have to undertake to live in one place in order to avoid travel while crops are growing. It consists in a meeting of the bhikkhus who have spent the rains together, at which each member present invites the community or invite each other to find out faults, breaches of Vinaya rules. Until that place, it's all right. committed during the preceding 3 months, that is not. That is not in the Vinaya books. And sometimes the authors just say what they think would be the case, but it really is not. Now, at the end of the rainy season, we have this ceremony of inviting the Sangha or inviting each other. And this invitation is not for the offenses committed during the preceding 3 months. It is for any time. Because we say, I invite the monks, I invite venerables. Whether you see me breaking a rule, or you hear me breaking a rule, or if you have suspicion that I am breaking a rule, please talk to me. And if I see it as an offense, then I will make amends. And that refers to any time. So after one has invited this way, then he could be told of his offenses any time. So it is not invitation for the faults committed during the preceding 3 months, but for any time. Although the ceremony is done at the end of the 3 months of rainy season retreat, it is not for only 3 months. It's for any time, or it's for the whole year. And we just did that ceremony at the monastery. It is to be done on the full moon day of October. In our countries, we have 4 months of rainy seasons, not 3 months. But monks are to observe and to live within the boundaries of the monastery for 3 months, not 4 months. So after 3 months, there is a ceremony of inviting each other so that they are free to find out mistakes or misconduct of each other. So committed during the preceding 3 months is not correct, and it is not in the Vinaya.
Is that ceremony received well?
Pardon?
Do the monks receive easily?
It is now something like a routine activity. So whether you really want to do it or not, you have to do it. And you invite it, and so that other monks can tell you about your faults or whatever anytime.
I think maybe what Gavin was saying is this difficult? I mean, it's not you have to do it, but is it do you dread?
No. It's not dreadful.
No.
People don't say ugly things to each other.
No, but it's venerable. You have broken this rule, so you ought to. You have to make amends, or you have to do something to exonerate from this offense, something like that. This way, monks help each other to have good conduct and to get rid of offenses if there are any. Sometimes a person may not be conscious of what he is doing. Suppose I'm eating and I eat until, say, 10 past 12 or 15 past 12, but I was not aware of that. Then other monk may say to me, when you ate today, it was past 12, something like that. Then I broke the rule in that case, so I must make confession about that. This the first one is about dwelling. So the other monk has many things brought with him when he visited the Anuradhapura. Now family, the next one. And in the paragraph 36, as in the case of the young bhikkhu, the nephew of the elder who lived at the Korandaga monastery, he went to, not we. What do you have there? We or he?
He.
Oh, this book has we. So he went to Rohana for instructions. That's correct. So these are the stories, inspiring stories. And then paragraph 43 about gain. Gain is the four requisites. So gain means what monks get as the donation from lay people. So these requisites are called gain. And on the next page, about five or six lines from the top, again, even at the dawn, alms food eaters fond of opulence come and say, "Venerable sir, such and such a man, lay follower, woman, lay follower, a minister." And a minister's daughter, not friend. I don't know why he took it to mean friend. The Pali word is amatya, and amatya means a minister, a political minister, and not a religious minister. So instead of friend, we should have a minister, and friend's daughter, we should have a minister's daughter, wants to see you, and so on.
Maybe officials would be better, because minister usually in this country means... Mm-hmm.
Religious minister?
Yeah. So official is...
Official?
Yeah,
it's
uh-huh. Usually might be better.
And then with regard to class, there's nothing difficult. And then building... Now he gives the word karma here. So karma really means something to do, not the building itself. So it is called nava karma here. Nava means new. So new work to do at the monastery. New work means, say, to repair something at the monastery. And when a monk is engaged in this, then he cannot practice meditation because he has to be concerned about many things. And then travel is going on a journey. If someone is expected to give the going forth somewhere else, it actually means if there is someone who wants to go forth, who wants to ordain, not expected to give the going forth somewhere. So if there is someone who wants to go forth or who wants ordination, or if some requisite is obtainable there and he cannot rest content without getting it, that will be an impediment. And ascetic duties means practice of monks' duties. Duties here means practice of meditation. And so one in this position should apply himself to the ascetic duties only after he has done, so only is missing there, only after he has done the journey and transacted the business. And then kin, now paragraph 49. Mother and father should be treated like the preceptor. So monks are allowed to give medicine to his father and mother. if they live within the kingdom and look to their son for help, it should be given. Also, if they have no medicine, he should give them his own. If he has none, he should go in search of it as alms and give that. But in the case of brothers or sisters, one should only give them what is theirs. What do you understand that? The monk should give them what is theirs. Does that make sense?
Their own medicine?
They have their own medicine. He doesn't need to give them. They already have this medicine. So the original here means that he must mix together. You know what you got that? Compound. He must compound the ingredients and give it to them, because monks know how to compound medicine. Lay people may not know, but lay people have the ingredients at their house. So he put all of them together in different proportions and then give them as a medicine. So give them what is theirs is after compounding the ingredients. And the ingredients must belong to them, to the brother and sister, and not to the monk.